This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Good evening and welcome to Well. You are with Tex and Kylie on Joy 94.9. That was Florence and the Machine with Dog Days Are Over. And that was especially for all the girls from Hear Me Roar. Big thank you to them. How are you, Tex?
Kylie, I'm really well tonight. It's a lovely night tonight in the city. It's not too cold. And it's been quite an all right day. Had a bit of rain. We need the rain.
It was great. I was very excited about the rain as I was driving in.
I was very excited because I dug over the garden last weekend and it needed a bit of moisture to get it all happening. So I'm happy it got happening.
Good, yes.
Now, Kylie.
Yes.
What's on the show tonight?
Well, tonight, we have an interview that we participated in, I guess you would say, a few days ago with Michelle Earle from the Alfred Sex Health and Wellbeing Service, which is a service people may not have heard about.
No.
And they run a range of services for people based at the Alfred. And we've also got some HIV news and also a bit of news from the IAS conference, which is the International AIDS Society. And they have a conference every 2 years on prevention, pathogenesis, it's a big word, and treatment. And it was held in South Africa and it ended yesterday. So there's a bit of news from that conference, as always, very big conference, lots of news. And so we've got some of that coming up for you.
Great.
And as always, we love to hear from you. You might want to say hi, perhaps come up with a topic for discussion
on
another
idea.
Show. Maybe you have a question. If you do, Tex, what can you do?
Well, you've got three options tonight. You could send us an SMS. It comes directly here into the studio, 0427-JOY. 949. Equally, emails come directly to us into the studio. So if your fingers are hovering over the keyboard, you could send us an email onair@joy.org.au. Or if you'd like to speak to a real live person, you can speak to a real live person named Gordon. And he's on the end of the telephone line, 96992949.
Well, you are with Tex and Kylie on Well. But coming up next is the interview with Michelle Earle.
Joy 94.9, the only radio station in the country that's out and proud. Joy 94.9.
Well, this is Well, and you are with Tex and Kylie. And earlier this week, we spoke to Michelle Earle. She's a clinical psychologist from the Alfred and within their Sex, Health and Wellbeing Service. Now, we talked to her about a new men's safe sexual health behaviour group, which is going to be commencing very shortly at the Alfred. And here is the first part of the two-part interview. Well, thanks for joining us in the studio today. Firstly, I'd like you to tell us about the Sex Health and Wellbeing Service at the Alfred. What makes up the service at the Alfred?
Well, firstly, thank you very much for inviting me to come in and talk. Really appreciate that opportunity. The Sex, Health and Wellbeing Service is the psychology service which is attached to the Victorian PEP service at the Alfred. And the principle of the service is that when people, I'm guessing that most of your listeners know about the PEP service, that when people have experienced a sexual risk event where they may have been exposed to HIV, that of course coming and getting prophylactic medication is going to be really important and opportunity to get sexual health screening, but they might also want to talk a bit about what's happened or about how they're travelling in life and how they're managing their sexual lives and any concerns they might have about that. So we provide them with an opportunity to come and do that.
Okay, so it might be for people who have gone to get PEP, which is post-exposure prophylaxis.
Exactly.
And it's not just for people who go on to take PEP, but other people who may not, who may just think that they've been at risk but don't need to take PEP?
That's it, exactly, yes. So many of the people who come to us have come and been prescribed PEP, and they as part of the prevention work that they're doing, they might come and talk to us. But it's open to anyone, to really any man who's had a sexual risk event, who's concerned about it and feels that there might be some kind of psychological factor operating. So some of the factors that I hear a lot about are people's difficulty maybe asserting themselves in relationships or being intimate and feeling that they can express their own needs, worries about loneliness, these sorts of things. So it's part of the total HIV prevention package.
Okay, so you mentioned the counselling services. Your role, are you a psychologist or a counsellor?
I'm a clinical psychologist, and my position is a senior clinical psych within the service. And really what that means is I'm a psychologist who's gone on and just done some further training. And yes, so what we do, there are lots of different terms you can use: counselling, psychological therapy, so on. It's really a talking-based approach, really talking and listening with people about their needs and identifying any areas that they might want to change and helping to work with them on those things.
Okay. You've joined us to talk about a men's group which is around enhancing safe sexual behaviour. Yes. Is this a new group?
It is, yes. So the Sex Health and Wellbeing Service, or the psychology service attached to the NPEP service, has been operating for about 4 years. So we've seen a lot of men over that time, and we've been trying to listen very much to their needs and their interests. And over time, I guess what we've identified is that there's some pretty common themes that repeat here, men coming with describing very common sequences that lead up to their sexual risk events, sexual risk experiences. And up until now, we've only offered individual sessions, and people have been, you know, pretty happy with that. But we really thought that it would be a missed opportunity not to see if we could develop a group opportunity for men to come and work on these kind of common scenarios that they're encountering and their struggles with them, but to get the added benefit of being able to be with peers and sort of have the validation, the understanding to share ideas and experiences, and to get the extra that you can't get one-on-one. So it's a new initiative, and we're really hoping to have enough men who are, you know, interested enough and brave enough, because I understand it's a pretty brave thing to do, to come and work for 10 weeks on building their skills and their confidence so that they can go out into their sexual lives and be masters of them.
You mentioned it's for men. It's not specifically for men who have just accessed the PEP service, is
it? Not at all. No. Anyone who's experienced sexual risk and is concerned about it and feels that they want to do something about it to change that, and that some of the work that they'd like to do is of a psychological nature.
Michelle, some of these men, now, are they all going to be gay men, or is it gay and bisexual men?
It would be gay and bisexual men.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, really how people identify is not central to the group. I guess if they feel that certainly there'd be men having sex with men, but the specifics of how they identify is not central, I don't think, to the core aims of this group.
Okay. Now, how you mentioned that it sort of evolved from the individual counselling you do. How does the workshop vary, or the group process vary, in terms of skill development when comparing it to the individual counselling?
Yes. Look, there's a lot of similarities, and as I said, we recognise now some very common patterns. For example, I'll just give you two or three. So very often people will come, and as I listen to the stories, what they say is, look, I didn't even realise I was out drinking, and one thing led to another, and I ended up somewhere, and then the morning after I thought, how did that even happen? I didn't even realise that was happening. So not being kind of aware of what's going on in them, their body, their mind, their feelings and so on, and then acting in ways that they may not have intended to. Another really common pattern might be people feeling fairly overwhelmed with certain feelings, or feeling really lonely or invalidated in some part of their life, and they want to feel better for a moment. And so sex might be one way that they do that. And in fact, probably all people use sex that way sometimes. So the kind of common human experiences that can lead people to put themselves in harm's way, we tackle those individually in a very similar way to the way we tackle them in the group. But the benefit of the group is that unlike the kind of intensive one-on-one when you're working individually, you get this potentially really lovely experience of being able to break down the shame, the sense of having to keep something secret that often goes with this that I hear about. You get a kind of microcosm of society represented in the group. You get to hear how different people's takes on it, how they deal with it, the changes they've been able to make over time and the encouragement of it. And you get people belonging to a community for that period. And I think for a lot of the men that I see, they're very isolated in this aspect of their lives, and I think that's another layer of that keeps them where they are. So I guess we're hoping the group can offer all of those things plus what you might get in individual work.
Okay. Well, that's our first part of our interview with Michelle Earle, a clinical psychologist from the Alfred Sex Health and Wellbeing Service. Stay tuned for the second part of that interview after these important messages and a song. You're with Tex and Kylie on Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Make sure you have a little joy in your life. Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9 and you are with Tex and Kylie on Well, Well, Well. That was the Pixies, one of my all-time favourite bands, with La La Love You from their Doolittle album. Now, if you've just joined us, earlier this week we spoke to Michelle Earle, who is a clinical psychologist from the Alfred and works in their Sex Health and Wellbeing Service. And we had a chat to her about a new men's safe sex sexual health behaviour group. Here is part two of the interview. Now, is the workshop different or similar to other groups that might be formed around sex or relationships, and are there other groups like that running that are kind of therapeutic?
Yes. Look, there are other groups. So I think BAC run groups around a number of things, and sex and relationships are some of those. So it's a bit hard for me to speak about the specific aims and the specific methods of those groups, but there certainly are other things out there. I guess one of the things that might differentiate this group and make it a new initiative is that the core aim is really about empowering people to be safer sexually. That's the core aim. But that actually the way it will work is that it's divided into two components. The first is really about developing skills and confidence. So it's quite specific about, for example, being much more self-aware of what's happening, thinking, feeling and body-wise to people, so that as sequences start to build up, they can grab it in the moment, think, right, okay, now I'm heading into a danger zone and I need to pull back, or I need not to have that drink or whatever. So there's definitely a skill component to it, which many groups wouldn't have, I don't think. And then there's a component to it which is about men talking about their experiences and being able to think about how they might apply this in their real life experiences. And between sessions, the sessions will go weekly, consecutively for 10 weeks, to be able to go out and experiment and come back to the group and say, well, look, I was in this situation last week, or, you know, I went to a bar and I noticed that I was able to stop here or do that, and it changed the course of events. That's the way it might differentiate from other groups, I think.
Okay. And one of the things I was thinking of in relation to that question was that is it peer-led, or is it led by counsellors and psychologists?
Yes. No, not peer-led. And I guess our hope is that we're trying to offer a combination of two psychologists, so it's I and a male colleague, who facilitate the group and will do some of the skills work, really lead that. And it's not particularly because we think we know, but just because, you know, we're in the position to accrue information and look at ways of learning things that have been shown to be effective, and, you know, we can kind of lead that part. But really, the other component of the group, where the men talk about their experiences, will be very much peer initiated. So we're hoping it will be a nice combination of both.
You mentioned an example of skills that the guys might learn in the group and be able to use in a real life situation.
Yes.
Is that through just discussion, or will it be things like role play or looking at other examples and experiences?
Through both. So the skills component will be certainly about some information and education. For example, I'm just thinking about of the three common sequences that, you know, we keep hearing about. This third one of difficulty negotiating in relationships and asserting oneself. So the skill component of that section would be very much about looking at assertiveness, what it is, how it differentiates from aggression, and all these other kind of standard educational this kind of standard educational information. But then there'll be opportunities to get in for people to examine themselves, to perhaps keep diaries or look at their own life patterns over time and identify where assertiveness has been present or missing or these sorts of things. There'll be opportunities to practice in the group and sort of play a bit with these ideas through role plays and other opportunities. So there'll certainly be that. There'll be some experimentation and practice and information, and then there'll be an opportunity for people to sort of see what they make of that and how it applies in their lives in the other section.
And so is there going to be information, like basic information around HIV, sexually transmitted infections, or is that something that's might be provided, say, in an information resource?
Yes, really in an information resource, because most of these people will be coming. They'll have either referred themselves, they might come through PEP, or maybe their local doctor has suggested, or they've talked about it with their doctor. So in a sense, what we're trying to do is complement the provision of information and things like condoms, which, you know, are really central in prevention. But we're trying to add to it by saying, let's look at the thoughts, feelings, and how they translate into actions of people, and within them as individuals actually build their strengths so that they can use the information that they have. And my experience in working with men over those years is that most people are aware of what constitutes highest risk sexual behaviour. But it's all these other things that get in the way, and that's human beings, naturally.
Michelle, this is being run out of a public hospital. It's not in the private part of a hospital. Is there going to be a cost for people to engage in this process?
No, there won't be. We're a publicly funded service, so we provide, you know, we'll provide the group in the same way. And the group is actually planned to run from the education section of the hospital. So you're absolutely right, it is part of the Alfred. But there's a conference and education set up there called the AMREP Centre, and it will be run from there. So it won't mean people coming into the main part of the hospital or coming into a medical clinic, because it's not about that. It's really much more about helping to inform, empower and build confidence in people, and that's why we're running it there. And we did consider other locations for running the group, but we thought that the Alfred is very central, we're guessing, for people that are kind of coming from across Melbourne and easy to get to. So a big part of this is really us wanting to try something and learn. And one of the – there is a lot of evidence out there, particularly from the US, for example, and parts of Europe, that counselling or psychological interventions for people that are about helping them to increase their safe sexual behaviour and reduce their risk behaviour can be very valuable and effective. And we feel that what's important is that we kind of develop something on the best evidence that's in line with the stories we're hearing from the local population, and try it and listen to the feedback we get. It's really all about learning.
Now, it's a 10-week program. How big will the group be?
Look, it's hard to know. We're still in the process of recruiting. But it would be anywhere between about seven each group. So if we have enough demand, we would run these consecutively. But each group, anywhere between about seven and nine. Probably no more than nine. It just gets too big, somewhere around that.
Okay. And so when is it commencing?
Look, we were hoping to commence not tomorrow but next Wednesday. I think it's not likely we'll commence on time as we'd hoped to, but sometime within the next month.
Okay.
It's really about making sure that we've got the right numbers and that the people who are coming in are really well suited to it, so that they're going to get what they want out of it, and doing it properly, yeah.
So everyone who is coming along to the group is interviewed beforehand?
Absolutely, yes. We'll meet with the facilitator, a colleague, Daniel, and I, and we'll get to tell us a bit about what brings them to us and what their interests are, a bit about what their experiences have been. We certainly do some screening for mental health needs. I mean, if people come and they're very depressed or highly anxious or these kinds of things or in crisis, you know, the group probably wouldn't be for them. It might be for something down the track and we'd refer them on, but... And to give them an opportunity to get to know us a bit, to hear a bit about why we're doing this, what our rationale is, and what they can expect of us.
And then I imagine at the end of the group you'll evaluate the group.
Absolutely.
And then that will lead on to the decision as to whether future groups are run.
Yes, yes, very much. So one of the things that people will do when they come, they'll meet for an intake interview, is they'll meet Daniel and I, and we'll also gather some information about their current sexual life, for example, and we'll do that again at the end, and obviously we'll do comparisons because we want to see what the outcomes will be in terms of their actual sexual risk behaviour and safe sex behaviour, but also some of these factors that we talked about that seem to mediate, that is, you know, dealing with overwhelming feelings that can sometimes propel you to substance use or then go on and have sex. So we'll want to have a look at some of those things. And we'll also be wanting to hear from them what they found helpful. So there'll be very much a consumer feedback component too. And the whole idea of this, as I said, it's just an initiative to trial and learn from. And if we find that there's enough people that are interested in participating in it and that there's good outcomes, there's some valuable outcomes for them, what we'd really like to do is build it. And, you know, there's all sorts of possibilities to run things from different locations or run with other agencies or all sorts of things. But it's really about getting in and giving it a try and seeing what happens.
That sounds great. So if people wanted to find out more about the group and have a chat with you about it, how can they get in contact with you?
They'd be very welcome to ring me, and the number at the Sex Health and Wellbeing Service is 9076 2653. We're a part-time service, so we may not pick the phone up straight away, but there's a voicemail on and people only have to leave a message and a number and times when they'd be free to talk, and we'll call them back always. So, and people are very welcome to ring and just ask questions. They don't have to feel that they're buying into anything. They're allowed to just ring and ask questions. We'd welcome that. And of course, just as if I may, even if people are not interested in participating in a group, if anyone's concerned, feel that they have been in situations where they've been at risk sexually and they want to come and talk to someone a bit more about it and just consider their options, what is available for them, they'd be very welcome to ring also.
That's great. Now, there's also some ads in MCV and Southern Star, so people Indeed. May have seen those in the last few weeks. Well, thanks for joining us today. We'll keep all these details at Joy if anyone is interested.
Thank you, Kylie and Tex.
And we look forward to talking to you perhaps after the workshop to find out how it went.
Yeah, cross fingers. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks. Well, that was Michelle Earle from the Alfred Sex Health and Wellbeing Service. If you are interested in participating in that group or finding out more about it, you can contact Michelle or Earl on 9076 2653. That's 9076 2653. You are with Tex and Kylie on Well 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 on Joy 94.9.
Thought as well, he likes my music.
Oh,
that's always exciting. That just adds to the competition. every week we look at pieces of news from around the world on HIV, sexual health. And there's one that we found on AIDSMAP. We often use AIDSMAP as a source of information and news. They report on research and, I guess, what's happening globally in HIV, and it's AIDSMAP.com. If you would like to check out the website, it's full of fascinating information.
Really fascinating stuff.
And also just information resources on HIV. But there's been a new bit of research that says gay and bisexual men who are diagnosed with HIV in the first few weeks after infection make significant changes to their sexual behaviour. And this is from a group of British researchers, and it's been published in HIV Medicine. And while risky behaviour was common before diagnosis, three quarters of men surveyed posed no risk of onward transmission
transmission during the 3 months after their test result. The authors argue that this demonstrates the value of early diagnosis.
And it's really interesting because they go on to argue that the more intensive risk reduction counselling, so that's the counselling that people are given after they test HIV positive, should be targeted towards men in primary infection, especially, and they say especially the minority who are most likely to continue with risk behaviours. They go on to suggest that even short-lived changes in behaviour will have a significant impact on onward transmission. And I think here, Kylie, we did a key word then, primary HIV infection. So it's important to just let people know that this is the period just after infection during which HIV viral load and infectivity, so the likelihood that people will pass on the virus, are exceptionally high.
And I guess it's not, I don't know if it's commonly known that sort of the rate that HIV is replicating in the body is high. I don't know if that's commonly known. And also with testing, you are often told to wait 12 weeks after, and you think it's a potential risk exposure if you are testing at your local GP. But for, if you are going to Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, you are tested earlier, and I think testing there will provide that opportunity, because you know when you go to somewhere like Melbourne Sexual Health or a gay-friendly clinic or somewhere that has a high caseload of HIV cases, that you are going to get not just a test, but you're also going to get that really valuable post-test discussion or counselling where there is that opportunity to talk about risk, you know, what is risk, particular behaviours, that kind of thing. So I think it's a really great opportunity, and if men are coming in that early stages.
And it's interesting, of course, because not everybody has the opportunity to go to a gay clinic or a clinic which is known for HIV specialising doctors, or even for that matter to come into the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. Of course, there are sexual health centres in every capital city in Australia, in every state and territory. But of course it also has to be remembered that people who are HIV positive are also more likely to pick up sexually transmitted infections, and that not just in the immediate aftermath of having a diagnosis made, but generally through the life of a person with HIV, sexually transmitted infections can be more easily picked up. But of course, people who are having regular testing, those infections are going to be picked up, and the treatment will be there, hopefully to help them get rid of that.
I guess it's another important step in talking about testing, because testing was an important issue in the sense when better drugs became available. So there was that importance around testing and knowing your status, and then you actually then could have access to the treatments, whereas there was a time before the treatments where it was such an importance placed on testing when there was nothing.
I well remember those times when AIDS councils, to a degree, and people living with HIV AIDS organisations were actively discouraging people from testing, thinking, well, what's the point of testing?
So it brings testing back into a spotlight, and I guess along with the testing is that important pre- and post-test discussion that happens, and that's where a lot of the education happens, and that it is so important. So I think if there is a push for testing, based on this, I don't think they would base it just on this research, but if there is a push for testing, for example, then I think there also needs to be that balance with what actually happens in that testing situation that is so important and valuable.
And it's also important to remember that irrespective of what post-test counselling you get, there's information available, both on the net but also printed information, which is available from PLWHA, people living with HIV/AIDS organisations and AIDS councils around the country, and I'd suggest around the world, to provide you that information about the what next stuff. We had someone come in this week who had been tested and received no post-test counselling apart from, you've got it, goodbye. And his partner came rushing in to get information, and hopefully that information's now been passed on.
So it's not an activity that's,
should be just, you know, it's just a test and off you go. So there needs to be that importance.
There's important information to find out.
Well, we're going to talk about some more news that's come out of a recent AIDS conference after these important messages and another track. You're with Tex and Kylie on Well, Well, Well.
Joy 94.9. A little less straight than other radio stations.
You are with Tex and Kylie on Well, Well, Well. And that was the gorgeous Adele with Cold Shoulder.
We don't like to get the cold shoulder, but we like to hear it.
You approve?
No, yes, of course, my dear.
Fantastic. Now, earlier I mentioned that we do have some news from an international AIDS conference that has just finished yesterday. It was held in South Africa. It was the 5th International AIDS Society Conference on Pathogenesis, Treatment and Prevention.
Thank goodness you got to say that.
Don't know the real meaning of pathogenesis, but, you know.
Google it.
Cells and...
Yeah. Things like that, Kylie.
Petri dishes, microscopes. Things that we don't use.
No.
And probably wouldn't be let near.
I do have a microscope at home, though. Just haven't used it since I was about 16.
Well, were you the kind of kid that used to, like, set bugs on fire with magnifying glasses? And
I was setting ants on fire, yeah.
You did?
Yes.
Oh.
I know, that's shocking.
It's very mean.
But it was a long time ago, and I've, you know, a lot of water under the bridge, and I've learnt.
But some of the, I went and had a look through all the bits of news that came out, and one of them I thought was interesting was the shift in priorities in biomedical HIV prevention. So there has been a lot of focus on, I guess, a vaccine. When's there going to be a vaccine? You know, they were saying, you know, a couple of years ago, 10 years, we're going to have a vaccine, and now,
Kylie,
it's like...
When I joined the organisation 20 years ago, the vaccine was coming in 10 years' time.
They thought they were going to have one in five years because they isolated HIV very quickly, very early. And so it was like, wow, fantastic, we're going to have a vaccine. But they're still looking.
Alas, not.
And one of the reasons why there has been a fall in the funding is that two of the major studies have ended, and it's not to do with the GFC, as everyone...
The global financial crisis.
Yes,
yep.
I'm going to put that on a T-shirt or something. I'm surprised no one has. it's the BUZZ, you know, acronym at the moment. And but there's been an increase in money that's been made available for microbicide research and pre-exposure prophylaxis. And so... I think it would be great to do a program on these kind of new prevention technologies. There's been a lot of focus on it. You know, in Africa, there was quite a focus on circumcision as a biomedical prevention strategy, and that was talked a lot about at this conference because the research was published in around 2005, and so this was the first conference that was really going to see how that had been rolled out. But there is a research that's going to be done around pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is PrEP, so taking perhaps an antiretroviral therapy to prevent transmission of HIV, and then microbicide, which would be gels, creams, pessaries, that kind of thing that you might insert into the vagina or the rectum, the anus, to prevent transmission.
Yeah, and it's they have pointed out, of course, that there are big challenges coming up over the years to come, both scientific and, of course, everyone's talking at the moment about economic challenges that there are, and just the fact that we mustn't lose sight about the momentum that's been gained in looking at all fields of research.
And we mustn't forget that we do have access to the best possible biomedical prevention, which is a condom.
A condom and water-based lube, or if you're allergic to latex condoms, there are now non-latex condoms, which can be used both with water-based lube and with oil-based substances as well.
And it's more effective than any of these.
That's right. Things. Yeah.
Very important to remember.
Really important to remember that. Condom and water-based lube, it's been a continuing message over the years and stays there.
And just quickly, this one I just flagged because I just thought it was so obvious and I can't believe they would need a statement around it, is that the WHO will consult people with HIV about new treatment guidelines. So it says HIV-positive individuals in low- and middle-income countries will be asked to contribute to the development of the new treatment guidelines, which is fabulous because they're going to be the people that are taking the medications and
actually speaking with them.
And there is actually a set of guidelines for the greater involvement of people living with or affected by HIV. So it's good to see that the WHO is following those.
Yeah, and involving the global network of people living with HIV, which is really important. And there are a number of Australians that work in that network of people living with HIV, one in particular. I can think of. Good on you, Susan.
Yes.
Don't
she actually
tell me.
Came to present to us at uni, but that's another show. It is the...
Oh, come on.
We have come to the end of the show. We should thank Michelle Earle, who we interviewed earlier this week.
That's right.
I hope the group goes well and we'll get her back on the show at a later date to
find out
about it.
What it went and what the main issues that were brought up were. It'd be really interesting.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.